Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Melissa Kirsch is the Editor-in-Chief of Lifehacker, as well as the author of The Girl's Guide and the co-host of Lifehacker's podcast, The Upgrade. Hey, Melissa, it's great to have you on the show.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're really eager to hear your tool choices and to have the perspective of Lifehacker here.
Yeah, we're huge fans of Lifehacker, so this is going to be a lot of fun.
Excellent. Yeah, I know you've had some of my predecessors on here a while ago.
That's right. Yeah, we had Gina Trapani, and also what was the former editor in chief's name? I forget his name.
Oh, Alan Henry.
Right, and Alan Henry as well. Yeah. So it's great. I love it. Melissa, why don't you just start by telling us about Write Room?
Okay, so Write Room is a word processing program, and I find it just the thing for keeping me from surfing the internet when I'm trying to write something. You know, it bills itself as distraction free. There are a few different themes that you can choose from, but the one that I like is sort of the like phosphor green terminal font on a black background with a block cursor that looks, you know, like an original terminal font from like a CRT monitor. And it's a really, it really feels like a room. You know, the description of it as a Write Room is really apt because there's nothing. If you go into full screen mode, there are absolutely no menus. There are no choices. It really is sort of the simplicity of the, you know, the terminal line, which I find extremely soothing for writing. Mm-hmm. And it sort of takes away the mediation by, you know, different fonts or different choices that sort of can gum up the works in something like Word or Google Docs or Scrivener, which I know that a lot of people are fans of. But if you need complex systems for your writing, then it's certainly not the tool for you.
And so the way you would use it, you would write in this Write Room, then would you export it to another fancier, more distracting word processor to do the formatting and all those kinds of stuff that you might need?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it depends on what you're using a document for or using the words for. But yeah, I save it as a text file. And then if, you know, I'm creating a document to share with other people, I could move it into Google Docs and format it there. And, you know, rather than worrying about the formatting while I'm writing, you know, there's so much that comes up, certainly in Word, you know, where, you know, the line break just doesn't look right for you, or there's, you know, you're trying to figure out which typeface to use each day. And for me, just sort of having this neutral font, it feels quite freeing.
Right. The thing that Word does, which is always correcting my spelling.
Yes.
And I don't know how to turn that off. I find it really distracting as I'm going along because I don't want to even know.
Right. You don't want to know. You just want to get it down, and you're going back and, you know, finding out you don't know how to spell resuscitate. Yeah, that's my problem too. And or the margins are wrong. I don't know. I used to get really hung up on the typeface, whether it was a serif or sans serif font and what I was conveying with that. And obviously, I still worry about those things, but I just worry about them at the end.
Yeah. Okay. And so this is for the Mac. Probably somewhere out there, there's an equivalent for the PC as well. And is this a one-time purchase? You just
pay for it,
or is it free, or what? How does it work?
No, it's a one-time purchase, and I think it's under $10. I could be wrong. And there is, I believe, an iOS app, and people have made iOS apps sort of imitating it as well. I use one on my phone that, you know, accesses your Dropbox, and you can save things to the cloud through it.
So Melissa, for me, the one thing that I need, and I think a lot of writers need, is a word count. Does that do it?
Yep, it does the word count. You can turn on features, you know, and you don't have to have the terminal view. If you prefer, you know, a white page with black type, you know, you can have that as well. Yes, you can get the word count. You can do spell check. You can do these things, but they're just not, they're not persistent. So mm-hmm. you don't have those menus and everything while you're writing.
That's cool. That's great. So, the program that I use when I want distraction-free writing is BB Edit, which is,
oh yeah,
you know, it's like kind of, it's for coders really, but, mm-hmm. and also it's kind of, it's a little more expensive than this. Well, right. A lot more. So this is probably like actually what I should be using.
I mean, I think things like BB Edit, you know, it was, you know, revolutionary because it was a like bare bones, right? Like it, it was for people who didn't want to fuss around with things. I mean, obviously for coding, but I think a lot of people ended up using it for word processing.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I still write a lot in email just because for the same reason, I don't want all this stuff. I just open an email, start writing. And,
that's great.
Because it's naked. There's kind of a raw mm-hmm. ASCII. And then I'll move it into a word processor later.
Right.
That's cool.
Yeah, I do that with Evernote too. You know, I don't love the way it looks, but just knowing mm-hmm. that I'm typing into the cloud makes me feel like I'm skipping a step.
That's interesting. Yeah. Typing into the cloud. I like that. That's the name of my next book.
Excellent.
There you go.
Our work is done.
Okay, so what's another one on your list? Let's see. I don't even know how to say this. But you know, talking about recovery sandals. What does that even mean?
You know, it sounds like something you might find in a hospital, and I'm not sure you don't find these in hospitals. I think you pronounce it OOFOS, OOFOS, and they're mm-hmm. They bill themselves as recovery sandals. They're extremely ugly generally, and that is something that I had to contend with. I had a friend who had them and was wearing them as slippers, these sort of flip-flops, and I didn't understand why someone would pick something that was so aggressively unattractive until I started having foot problems. And taking a break from running, but I used to be a runner because I'm taking a break because I have these foot problems. And OOFOS are made of some sort of proprietary foam that I'm not entirely sure what's happening in the sole of these flip-flops, but they seem to relieve all the pain in my feet. And the pain is not insignificant. So the second that I walk into the house, I put these on, whether, you know, whether I'm alone or not. I've gotten comfortable with people seeing these sort of hideous flip-flops. But yeah, they're just like heavily cushioned, extremely comfortable shoes. I think they make a bunch of different kinds of shoes. But if you have any foot problems like a bunion or I have a Morton's Neuroma, which I just found out about. I'm not even entirely sure what that is, but any kind of like training related injury. Certainly if you're like a marathoner, I'm assuming the recovery refers to people who actually need to recover, use sandals for recovery.
So looking at their website, besides the sandals, they do have shoes mm-hmm. and they have things called clogs, which look like your Crocs without holes.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they are all ugly yep. on purpose, apparently. but and the idea, what the magic is that's happening is in the soles,
right? Right.
Which and it looks like they might also have kind of a slight like, what's the word I want? Kind of
like a rocker kind of.
Yeah, like a rocker thing. Back in
yeah,
the back.
Yeah.
Like an earth shoe or something.
Yeah, I think that's what's happening. I've looked on their website to kind of try to figure out precisely what the mechanism is that makes them so comfortable, but I can't figure it out. And while I'm talking about it, I should say I do have a pair of the shoes, and I wear them occasionally and just sort of, I feel like they look like sort of alien shoes, and I delude myself into thinking that they come back around and become fashionable.
If you wear them long enough.
Exactly, exactly. If you wear them confidently enough. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who knows?
Is yeah, possible? No, you don't know. I mean, and there may be people who think that they look good. I shouldn't rag on them so much, but it's just that had been my initial reaction, and now I'm just so grateful for them because they provide so much relief.
Okay. So, so if you have problems with your feet, you might give them a try.
Exactly.
Very cool.
Okay. So, how about your third favorite tool?
I've listened to Cool Tools before, and I specifically was listening to Nick Bilton last night, and he started talking about his coffee setup, and I worried that he would have mine, and the night before I was talking to you guys that he would select mine, but he had something far more exciting than mine. But anyway, the coffee maker that I love, I got recently, it's the Technivorm Mocha Master KBG741. And I didn't think that I was a coffee snob in any way, but I was advised by a doctor to stop using any sweetener in my coffee. And I didn't think that that would be so difficult, but it actually has proven to be quite awful to wean myself from Splenda. But I thought if I drank better tasting coffee, I may have an easier time. And that is true. This is a drip coffee maker, which I know that coffee snobs tend to disdain. it's a really beautiful coffee maker. Just aesthetically, I like having it on the counter. It's handmade in the Netherlands of completely recyclable materials, and each element can be replaced independently. So while it's not cheap at the outset, you can hopefully repair it yourself for many years to come. They have all kinds of features that they tout, like consistent brewing temperature and a special copper boiling element. And they say that the Mocha Master makes something called the gold cup or the golden cup of coffee, which is, I think, the Technivorm people's own designation for a really delicious tasting cup of coffee. It's not like an award that's been bestowed on it. Uh-huh. But I have to say that it makes the best coffee I've ever tasted.
Wow.
And so why did you go with the drip? Had you tasted some drip that you really liked?
I had a friend who had this coffee maker, and I stayed at her house and couldn't believe that the drip coffee tasted so good. I like the drip because it's easier to clean up, which, you know, I feel a little bit ashamed because, you know, you're supposed to suffer a little bit for your coffee and, you know, be cleaning the grinds out of your press pot or whatever, your Chemex. It's, you know, it functions the way that, you know, an old school Mr. Coffee does generally. But it looks a lot better. It tastes good. I also, you know, it doesn't have any bells and whistles, but I connected it. And again, this is a violation of coffee, an elitist coffee regimen, but I have a smart plug that I plugged it into so that I can have it on a timer. Because it doesn't have a timer, because evidently, you know, you're not supposed to grind your beans before, you know, 1 second before you use them, so letting it sit overnight and leave your water out like that. But I can't tell the difference on that count. So I set it before I go to bed, and then I can wake up to hot coffee.
It really, also, we should just talk about how, as a piece of industrial design, how gorgeous it is.
Totally, totally.
Right. It's not the sort of, what do you call it, kind of simple, brutal iPhone sensibility. It's much more a kind of an exploratorium, let all the functions reveal themselves aesthetic.
Yes, exactly. It is not pretending to be anything. I mean, it's only pretense is that it comes in fashion colors. Mm-hmm. And I have the sky blue one, and I find it very attractive. But it's not really sleek. And if you compare it to the original model from the 60s, it's pretty much unchanged.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, it's great! Yeah, cool. I would either get the pastel green or yellow pepper.
Oh, yeah, they're it's a really good looking coffee maker.
The colors are great. What a fantastic palette. I'm going to steal this palette for my illustrating and stuff.
We have our oven stove is that yellow pepper.
Oh, cool.
Really?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Kevin. It is.
It's the only color in the kitchen, really, but it's just really pops. And it's really, I love that color in the kitchen.
Who makes a yellow stove?
Blue Star.
Uh-huh.
Blue Star is a stove we have, which we love. We have a 6-burner one, and it was relatively inexpensive, but you can choose your color. And we got this yellow pepper color that's just fantastic.
Oh, excellent. And did you choose it specifically because of the color or?
No, it's like the coffee maker, the Mocha Master. There's a range, there's a selection of colors of, mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe 25 colors, and the yellow was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So we just ordered it in that color.
Nice.
Oh, so Melissa, tell me, how much does it cost? I bet it's a lot.
You know, I think it's about 300. It might be a little less than that.
That's not too bad, actually.
I mean, you know, it's a lot for an appliance, but I've also, you know, the kind of like silly math that economists use to tell you that, you know, you'll never have a retirement account if you buy lattes from Starbucks. I should be growing my retirement account because of this, because I really have stopped drinking takeout coffee. So I don't know. It sort of depends on what your needs are. I find like the early morning hours drinking coffee at home is sort of the most precious time of the day. So I wanted to invest in it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, yeah, that's actually a decent price then.
Yeah, no, it's not like a Jura espresso maker. It's not like a restaurant quality situation, although I think that Technivore makes some fancier ones.
Yeah, I noticed they do make industrial like restaurant kind of ones, but mm-hmm. I like the way this one looks the best.
Well, yeah, cool. Me too.
Very, very cool. So you have one more. And
I do.
It's a type of a bicycle?
Yes. I think that like the world's best life hack right now is a pedal assist bike. I sort of, you agree? I'm so glad.
Absolutely. 100%. E-bikes, which.
Right.
That's what you're talking about, right?
Yes.
I pedal assist e-bike?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean,
it's absolutely the thing to have. And whether you buy one or hack one. And by the way, if you ever go touring or traveling,
mm-hmm.
it's really the way to see a city.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be really common. I could believe at a certain point in time, all bicycles will be electric pedal assist bikes.
Exactly.
For my 80-year-old parents, it's like they've always been biking their entire lives, and now they have these, and they are still biking as much as they ever did because of these, and they love them.
Exactly. So the one that I have is made by a company that may or may not be going out of business, but the company is called Faraday, and it was a designer from Apple, I don't remember his name, who started this company. And he wanted to make a beautiful electric bike because often, you know, the batteries are sort of ugly and bulky. And I know that will mm-hmm. That will change, I'm sure. And it's changing rapidly. The battery for the Faradays are in the down tube, so you can't see them. So it pretty much looks like an old school kind of cruiser bike.
Yeah, they're pretty.
Yeah. And I tested one for a story thinking, you know, I used to ride my bike everywhere. And then I moved from Manhattan to Brooklyn, and I continued to ride my bike everywhere, except to work, because I had to bike over the bridge, and the bridge, I would start to sweat and then arrive at work sweaty. And that was it sort of a deal breaker. And so I had a feeling that an electric bike could be the answer, but it just seemed, it seemed too easy. And so I tested one, and then it was so freeing and amazing. And it wasn't just going over the bridge that became a sweat-free experience. It was, you know, I took it on vacation with me, and there, you know, in some mountains where I had, you know, like been unable to bike up a hill the previous summer, I was able to cruise up, you know, with a tiny bit of effort. And, you know, the way that I describe being on an electric bike is that it's like the dream where you're flying, you know, like you're walking and suddenly you're flying. It's like, it's like there's exactly a wind behind you, you know, it's just something's helping you. And I can't even imagine how it would transform being on, you know, like a bike tour of another country, and how it sort of evens the playing field for people. I've heard, you know, that they can, you know, bike with their spouse who's faster than they are. And it's just, it's great.
And what's surprising is that even a smallest motor can make a huge difference. I mean, it doesn't even need to be very powerful. Just that little extra kind of tailwind is enough to transform something that's, you know, where you're sweating and exhausted to something that you enjoy. And that's why these new electric bikes, they're pretty trim. They don't look, because the kind of motors and power that you need is really not that great. And so and it is just an assist. You're still working, but you're not exhausting yourself.
Right. And so, you know, when you don't need to get anywhere quickly, you know, you can just turn it off and it rides like a regular bike. The reason I liked the Faraday was because it was also the lightest one that I found. It weighs about 40 pounds, which is still fairly heavy for a bike, but, you know, they generally run 50, 60, 70 pounds. And living in New York City, it's really hard to store a heavy bike like that if you don't have a garage or something. But yeah, mine has a 250 watt motor, which, you know, it's not going to, you know, power a car. But it just, the possibilities that it opened up for me have been so, so great, you know. And also there's obviously the environmental impact, which is great. And if you live in a city with kind of failing transportation as I do, it's wonderful. You feel like you're cheating, you know, when you get out of having to take the subway in New York.
So in the design of the bike, is the driving motor in the,
it's in the back hub. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. It's in the front hub. I'm sorry. Yeah. That's just the derailleur in the back. Yeah.
All right. So it's a front hub driven. Okay. Yeah. So, and is the Faraday the brand or the model, or is there the one that you like?
Faraday is the brand and the model. They have two models. The one that I have has this is the step through, and it's called the Cortland. And then they also have, one with, you know, why can't I even remember what it's called, with just like the horizontal bar where you lift your leg over. They have like two, they have two models, one with a belt drive and with a carbon belt drive, and the other with like a regular chain. And you know, the more expensive model has like hydraulic disc brakes, and it's pretty nice. That's something else that I learned from this is that I never want to have a chain again. You know, the belt drive is so much more stable. Yeah, and there's no oil.
Oh, cool. So that's like a rubber belt we're looking at that just has like teeth. It looks like a chain in the picture, right. But I see what you're talking about now.
They do have one with a chain. So the less expensive one has a chain. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The belt drive is it's probably quieter too. So list the price is $2,624. Mm-hmm. But you began by saying that the company might not be around.
That's the thing. That's my only caveat. So they're still selling them. I think that they were acquired by another company and they're not, they're going to continue to support them, but I don't think they're going to be developing any new ones. So, I feel like if you love the bike and you want one, that you should get one, and they are going to continue providing support for them. But, you know, I would say that my general recommendation is for pedal assist bikes in general. And I'm sure there will be pedal assist bikes as beautiful as the Faradays coming out, if there aren't already. I've seen some on the road and wondered about them. But if you want one, you know, I think that I'm surprised that they aren't able to keep developing new bikes, but I think it may be because they sought to make everything so pristine and put the battery on the inside that, you know, that the parts might have become too expensive.
And how do you recharge it?
you plug it in. So
really, that is a cord. You mean like into the wall?
Into the wall, yeah. You plug the bike in.
So the charger is also built into the bike?
That's right.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Which, you know, and with a lot of electric bikes, you can take the battery and bring it inside, but leave the bike outside. That's certainly would be a lot easier. But if you're interested in hiding the battery inside the bike, then you have to plug the bike itself in.
And you can go 25 miles or so?
I think you go 25 miles with the motor on. So generally, you know, I only use the motor when I'm on hills. So I've gone as far as like 45 miles.
I mean, you've gone 45 miles with a single charge, not having to recharge it. Okay.
Exactly. You know, sort of keeping my eye on the gauge and making sure that, you know, I'm not using it too much.
Well, that's not bad.
So that I could get back. No, it's not. It's not bad. You know, and I think they're only, you know, the batteries are getting smaller. And you can always, you know, if you had to, you could stop and charge it anywhere.
Well, great. Well, that's a tremendous pick. Thank you for the tip. And I do, like you say, if not this one, people should look at other pedal assist bikes because they are becoming very comparable in terms of their form factor with, you know, regular bikes. And you can always turn the motor off and ride the hard way, but you have that option when you are at the end of the day or going up a hill. It really does change it.
Melissa, in totally. The few minutes that we have left, could you tell us about the book you wrote called The Girl's Guide? What is it?
Sure. It is a book for college grads. And I wrote it when I myself was not that long out of college. And I was looking for answers to questions that I couldn't find on the internet and that I hadn't been taught in school and didn't feel comfortable asking my parents about. And so I wrote the book sort of for myself at around age 27. And I'd say it's kind of, you know, like I joke now that it's sort of life hacker for women or life hacker for grads, for young grads, where it's sort of everything that I and my friends learned in the first, you know, 6 or 7 years that we were out of college that we wish someone had told us earlier, sort of about health and personal finance and friendships and family and kind of like negotiating our way in the world. I stand by it, even though I do feel more like, you know, it came out originally in 2007 and then I rewrote it in 2015 because so much had changed and the technology had sort of transformed everything and continues to obviously transform everything that we do. I feel like there are really good resources on the internet, certainly now, but I think that the book is the book that I wish somebody had given me when I was in my 20s.
Well, what's an example of some of that, something you wish someone had told you when you were 27 or 25 or 22?
I wish someone had told me how to say no without feeling guilty, which is something that it took a while to learn, or that, you know, just a lot of sort of like life skills things that I hadn't really confronted before, like that it was okay to apologize in order to save a friendship and not have to be right all the time. These were things that, you know, when I was writing the book, I asked everybody I knew to ask everybody they knew, like that same question that I had posed to myself, like, what do you know now that you wish you'd known earlier? And so I got these ideas from other people and I realized that some of the things I still didn't know, you know, that I hadn't even considered it. But, you know, I think that sort of like a common transition from being a young person to being an adult involves learning to value your own time and your own opinion and sort of developing compassion for other people and figuring out how you want to be in the world. And those kind of stickier social questions were things that I felt like somebody could have and should have told me about before I was on my own.
What about stuff like money management? And
yeah, writing about it was challenging for me because I didn't know a lot, and so set out to teach myself and also to then explain it to a person who didn't know a lot about it. And I speak to college students a lot, and that's something that they ask me about, and that I notice that people generally feel afraid about money for many different reasons, but the fact that there isn't some kind of personal finance class that is required for everybody, maybe in high school, just seems wild to me. But maybe it isn't wild because, you know, we don't teach civics anymore. You know, there are really useful things that you could teach people in school that are super practical. And, you know, so many people graduate college with so much debt, and then end up getting in more debt in order to, you know, kind of finance their lives because they're not making a lot of money. And the idea of saving just seems bananas. So I go into, you know, sort of the ins and outs of budgeting and investing and retirement and the things you don't want to think about, and try to make it as quick and painless as possible.
So Melissa, with this book seems like it would actually be okay for boys too, right?
Yeah, I think it would be. You know, when I finished writing the book, my publisher asked me, you know, if I was interested in writing a book for men. And at the time, you know, like the numbers didn't bear out that men read that much self-help. And cynically, when the book first came out, there was a book called The Game by Neil Strauss that had just come out. And
I know that book.
Somebody had told, you know, it's about pickup artistry. And someone had told me that that was the book, you know, that young men wanted to read. And that seemed just generally very sad to me, you know, that was the boy's guide. I think that it's certainly appropriate for guys too. You know, it's not specific only to women. I happen to have been working in women's media when I started working on it, so it sort of ended up being for women.
Sure, that sounds good. The other thing I just wanted to briefly touch on is talk a little bit about the Upgrade, which is Lifehacker's weekly podcast. What kind of things can listeners expect if they tune in to that?
Oh, every week, my co-host Alice and I go over or talk to experts about one way in which people can improve their lives. So just today, we did an interview for an episode that's coming out, I think, a week from Monday. And I don't know when this podcast comes out, but it comes out soon, about how to read people's minds. And we talked to a mentalist in Sweden. You know, we go over everything from, you know, how to use social awkwardness to your benefit, to stuff like having to do with money. We recently talked to somebody specifically about, you know, how to get out of debt, or how to find true love, or how to get over a breakup. So we take one topic each week and sort of apply the life hacker treatment to it.
That sounds really good.
Yeah, you guys should come on and teach us everything that you know.
In one subject.
With you guys, it's pretty limitless, right? Like we'll send you a list of things that you could talk about. You could choose one.
We'd be happy to.
That sounds great.
Yes.
I would love it.
We really appreciate your taking time and sharing with us these really four great tools, and then sharing with us your Girl's Guide, which sounds like it's I agree with you that these kinds of things should be taught in high school as a mandatory class. But if you don't have that, get one of these books.
Thank you so much for having me.
Melissa, this was really fun talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody. It's Mark from the Cool Tools Podcast. I want to thank you for being a listener to Cool Tools. And I also would like to let you know about our Patreon page. If you would like to support the Cool Tools show, as well as our video channel, the website, and all the newsletters that we do, you can go to patreon.com/cooltools, that's just one word, cool tools, and pledge any amount you want. You could even pledge $1 a month. Every little bit helps. We have editors, we pay for transcribing costs, we pay our reviewers. Every bit of money that you contribute goes towards supporting the show. I'd like to give a shout out to our supporters of the Cool Tools Podcast. This week, I'd like to thank the following Patreon supporters: Bill Schuler, Bob Kay, Ryan Pelly, Carl D. Patterson, Chad Cosby, Chris Wieland, Chris Weirstook, Craig Tooker, Dan O'Brien, Dean Putney, Danelle Cunningham, Evan Barker, Graham Medlin, Hans Riesbeck, Helen Hegedus, Jerry Kearns, Jim Lesko, Jim Spofford, John Pollock, John Burdenbaugh, Keith O., Ken Altman, Les Howard, Lauren Bast, Mock Nerd, Malton Make, Mark Goebel, Matt Gromes, Michael Douglas, Michael Jones, and Michael Pecorini. Thanks to all of you for supporting the Cool Tools Show. We really appreciate it.